This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It is hour number three. Thanks for joining us as we continue on a Throwback Thursday. Guys, I got to admit, I'm having fun with this. I love it. We've been doing game show themes because it's the anniversary of Wheel of Fortune being on TV, 1975. But we've been doing these game shows. I've been having fun. But what I'm really, one of the big stories this morning that's not so fun is what is going on with Antonio Brown and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Because it's now taken an interesting twist. Whereas before it has become a story about a player in his antics once again trying to derail a team and whose act is wearing thin, and yet another team has had enough. Pittsburgh, the Raiders, Patriots very briefly, and now this Tampa Bay team that he won a Super Bowl with. They all have had enough with Antonio Brown. That was at the beginning of the week. Now we've got this story about Antonio Brown is laying out some evidence that he was hurt. He was told to play that when he was hurt. He had told Bruce Arians. He has now got an Instagram. This is coming out now that he's got an Instagram post that shows the text conversation that he had with Bruce Arians about his injured ankle when Arian said he did not know he was hurt. This is going to get interesting, and it's going to force people to make a decision. It doesn't have to be one side versus the other. It doesn't have to be, well, now I'm on team Antonio Brown. Tampa Bay did him wrong. You can still not like the way Antonio Brown conducts himself and think he needs professional help because he's dealing with some things. He might be dealing with some things that really require that sort of diagnosis. But you also can say, but in the end, Tampa Bay did him wrong, right? If he really couldn't play on that ankle, if he really felt like he couldn't push off and gain separation, and that he was going to be a liability, and more importantly, didn't want to hurt himself even more. There's a difference between playing hurt and playing injured. He was injured. Then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers need to answer for this. They do need to answer questions on what did they know about this and why did they react in that certain way. You want your head coach to be passionate. You want your head coach to live in the moment of a game. But you also need your head coach at times to be able to pull himself out of that for a quick second and do what's right for the team and the players. Yelling at Antonio Brown for not going out in the game, if he indeed was injured, and this is a true story, Bruce Arians needs to answer why he did that. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio as we roll along on a Throwback Thursday.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Game show themes today on a Throwback Thursday. Wheel of Fortune, 1975, making its television debut. Chuck Woolery was the host. Pat Sajak took over in 81. Then Rolf Benerska, the NFL kicker for the Chargers, took over for a brief period of time. You're killing me with this one because I know this one.
I know you know this one.
Can't remember.
Well, I'll give you a hint. What if I said Mystery 7?
Mystery 7. Joker's Wild?
No.
No. Tic-Tac-Doe?
No.
I don't know.
All right. $100,000 Pyramid.
Oh, my God. I should know this one. I love $100,000 Pyramid. I used to love it with Dick Clark. Now these days versions, they're not that good. Dick Clark had a way.
You're talking about with Michael Strahan?
Yeah, I don't like any of these new renditions. Because here's the deal. Dick Clark, what I loved about Dick Clark was that, like, he would have, like, Soupy Sales as the celebrity sitting in the chair. And then he would have, like, Maria from San Bernardino, right? And then he would just talk nicely to them. Focus. Keep your head clear. This is for $100,000. Here is your first subject. Go. And then Soupy Sales would be like, fire truck. Fire truck. Fire truck. The girl would go, things that are red, things you drive, things that emergency vehicles, things you move out of the way. Fire truck. Things people ride on with ladders. I don't know. Give me another clue. And that would take up like 15 seconds of time.
Pass.
And then they would go pass. And then he'd be like, oh, I swim around in a bowl. What a goldfish would say. Bing. Right. And then they would be the next one. You know, they'd be like, watermelon. Fruit. Bing. Right. And then they'd have to go back to the first one. Fire truck. Right. And then the buzzer would sound. And Dick Clark would come over and he would go, ambulance. Police car. Things with a siren. Yeah. Oh. And Soupy would go, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, Maria from San Bernardino.
Did you always feel, too, like, because, you know, it's partly Soupy Sell's fault that he would sit there and just go, you know what, after the show, just meet me. I'll kick you a couple grand.
I'll just give you some money. Oh, one celebrity said that because you know how, like, you have rules? Like, you could say fire truck, but you can't say fire truck siren, right? Like, or something like that. One celebrity said that they got to the top of the pyramid and they were cruising. Everything was clicking. But he made a mistake and the game had to end. And he was like, I almost felt like I should write the guy a check. He's like, I just cost this guy $25,000. And yeah, that's got to be so much pressure when you're on that show as a celebrity. Just like, oh my God, you mean to tell me that his economic life could change if I do this well, if I do this game show well? I mean, it's not like Match Game. Match Game, those guys were drunk.
Yes.
Putting up stupid, you know. But $25,000 pyramid, you had to be good at that game or somebody from Iowa couldn't, you know, may not have 25 grand in their bank account.
Yeah. Match Game was, I mean, that's, God, some of those.
Match Game was
still
a
fun to watch.
Wild party. They were liquored up, having fun, laughing at each other, having a great time.
I'm thinking the after party was really boring.
Yeah, right.
Because they're all sleepy, tired, like, oh, I'm just going home. But the pre-party, before the show airs, that's where the party was.
You had Charles Nelson Reilly and Brett Summers passing out booze to, you know, people like Fannie Flagg, Betty White.
Yeah.
You know, all those celebrities, Richard Klein from Three's Company, whatever famous celebrity was on there, Gavin McLeod from Love Boat, whoever, Richard Dawson was on that show forever. They're all getting drunk. And the thing with Match Game was like all the things were like, they were like a little sexual in nature. You know what I mean?
Oh, everything was
like a little, you know, but they would go like, you know. Show is big blank, bum, 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 bum. And you know, you'd put like beach ball, you know, or something like whatever it was. But the way the clue read, it was sort of like, yeah, we're having a lot of fun here on Match Game, 1976,
yeah.
In our groovy pants. Yeah, God, this has been a fun show this morning talking about this. It almost bugs me that this Antonio Brown story actually might have Antonio Brown in the clear. I can't believe this. Antonio Brown just posted an Instagram post, as I mentioned at the top of the hour. He just posted an Instagram screenshot of a text message he had to Bruce Arians saying, hey, coach, here's my ankle. I'm trying to be good to go, but let me know what you think. And Bruce Arians said, give me a call when you get a chance. We'd love to have you if you're ready. And then Arians goes, I don't know anything about him being injured. Oh, okay. Now, this is true. If this is you, what are you saying about this? I don't want Antonio Brown to be right on this, but he might actually be right on this. Wouldn't that be weird? Like, all the things in Oakland when he was with the Raiders, you'd be like, dude, what are you doing? Freezing your feet in a cryo chamber, helmet wars with the team, getting in with Mike Mayock. But this one, he actually might have a case.
And if he does, I don't know if I want to believe it.
No, I know. I know.
Kind of ruins the stigma of what we have for Antonio Brown now.
Doesn't it? Because on the one hand, and we've been consistent about this all week, on the one hand, we've been saying this is clearly an individual that needs professional help, right? Clearly, like, and again, I can't diagnose that as an armchair sports talk show host, but you can sense a pattern here of behavior that doesn't seem to be normal. And I was talking about this on Monday. A lot of us have people in our lives, whether friends or even family members, that act out irresponsibly or irrationally where you go, this isn't normal. This isn't the person I know. Why are they acting like this? Why are they doing this? Right? And I told you about the friend of mine that I knew at the radio station and when I was in Colorado Springs who committed suicide. And there was a period of time where we were like, what's he doing? He got arrested. He was caught sleeping on a side of a road. And like he acted irrationally in the building. He believed everything was bugged. And like there was a period of time where people were saying he's crazy, but thinking back on it, he was really dealing with some personal demons. Most of us have somebody in our lives, whether we know them really well or maybe slightly, that has this kind of feeling and kind of these feelings. And Antonio Brown, by just our own experiences, was portraying that, like was showing that, where you would go, man, I really hope he gets the medication that he needs or something for whatever disorder he may be having, because this isn't how a normal human being reacts. Pull back for a second on that, because if indeed he was in the emotion of the moment, injured, and his coach is yelling at him, giving him the throat slash because he won't go out on a foot that's causing him extreme pain, if he is telling the truth, and that is a big if he is telling the truth, he has got a case against this football team when his behavior on Sunday showed that the team, right, should do everything in his power to get rid of this guy. And yet they may be on the hook for a lot of his treatment on that ankle because they didn't act really in his best interest either. So on the one hand, you had conduct that was so public, it needed to be called out, taking your jersey off, taking your shirt off underneath, jogging in the end zone, waving to fans, chucking clothes into the stands, leaving the team in the third quarter, trying to find a car that would take you out of the stadium and into the city. All of those things are not the way a normal person would have conducted themselves. On the same side of things, Bruce Arians, I kind of want to know an explanation. Did you know he was hurt? Did you try to make him play hurt? Did you go to him and threaten to cut him and give him the throat slash sign and tell him you're done because he wouldn't go out if he was injured? If you did those things, while they're not as extreme and crazy and nuts like what Antonio Brown displayed, you do have a behavior that was a problem. That is also an issue. And that is also not tolerated by the union in this league. You as a coach cannot threaten a job for a player who is legitimately injured. And if you knew that and did it anyway, your conduct is terrible too, on a different level, but terrible too. And that's the thing I'm seeing here in this story. I am not seeing a good side or a bad side. I am seeing two sides that acted really terribly to each other. One was a little bit more private. The other was so dramatic, it caused the scorn and mock of the United States. Right? And that's the difference. Bruce Arians may have conducted himself worse in the sense that he threatened a player by Antonio Brown's account. And again, I have to say this, and we've been saying it all morning, if he's telling the truth. If he's telling the truth, a head coach of an NFL team threatened the job of a contracted athlete because that athlete was injured and didn't want to play injured. Again, difference between playing hurt and injured. Please, you need to understand that because a lot of you will say, this guy played, this guy played, this guy played. First of all, as an athlete, you have the right, if you have a legit injury, to say, I don't want to play. Sometimes you choose to play with that injury. Jack Youngblood certainly had an injured leg in Super Bowl 14, given that it was broken. But you can say, no, my ankle can't, I can't go on this. And when I'm cut at the end of the season because of this, and I can't get on with another team, no, we're not doing that. The union is very, very, very protective of this. Because if they can make you play hurt, that means they can cut you at the end of the season and not pay you because you didn't produce. The union is very protective. It's just a weird camp to be in because I'm not on Antonio Brown's side. I think both of these entities acted terribly to each other. And one was embarrassingly so. But the other could be more embarrassingly so if indeed Antonio Brown is telling the truth. All right, coming up, the games this weekend have some implications. Some have zero implications. But there's one decision one team has to make that could affect the way they get to the Super Bowl. That's next on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call.
is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this is Match Game. Now, we were just talking about this before at our celebration of game shows here on Throwback Thursday. By the way, in case you're just joining us, it's because Wheel of Fortune made its debut in 1975 on this date. So there you go. This was my favorite game show when I was a kid. When I was a kid, this is my favorite. Gene Rayburn was so good, and the stars were fun.
The outfits.
The outfits were wild.
I mean, you watch them now, you're like, oh, my God.
And I think my favorite part as a kid, because I was easily amused, my favorite part as a kid is at the bonus round when the celebrities, well, there was two versions of the bonus round. In the early days, you would pick the celebrity. Then they actually spun a wheel because everyone used to pick Richard Dawson all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And it got to a point where they went, we got to give the other celebrities a chance to participate. So you spun a wheel, and then you could land on, if you landed on a star within the name, you doubled your prize. So if you got 5,000, it was now 10,000. And then Gene Rayburn would give one word, and then you would fill in the blank, and then that celebrity would then try to match you. And so once, like they would say, like, oh, I don't know, Twilight blank. Right. And you would either say zone or twilight
hour
or whatever it is. And what always seemed to happen. And it, again, my memory is like it happened all the time was that let's say the clue was twilight and you said zone and I had Richard Dawson. Richard would go, oh, yeah, I was thinking like in another direction, but I'm sorry, I went with zone. And then everyone would lose their minds because he tricked you. You thought he was going one way, but no, you got the right answer and you won.
See, now, out of the new versions of the game show, like where is Michael Strahan doing $100,000 Pyramid or Elizabeth Banks doing Pressure Luck, I do like Match Game.
And oh, okay, is that good?
It's fun. I mean, Alec Baldwin hosts, but it's essentially the same thing just with current stars.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
You know, so you have current comedians up there, you know, like Louis Anderson is up there, or Bill Engvall, or, you know, just name any, you recognize all the celebrities. Sherry Shepherd, I think she's been on there a couple times. And it's the same exact thing. Just open-ended questions that are phrased in such a way that, I don't know, maybe it just shows your personality. that your mind tends to lean to the
dirty.
Yeah,
they were a little dirty. Yeah, they were like, and then you would manipulate the answer to kind of avoid the dirty answer, the X-rated answer, to give an answer that was a little bit more, G-rated. Yeah,
right.
That's how that worked.
Or allow the comedians to have fun.
Absolutely.
Or allow these stars to tap into their comedic personality.
Yep.
So, but I mean, that one, I actually do enjoy that one just because it's, just, I mean, you know, it's the same thing as the 70s. It's just a newer version.
Yeah.
It's probably exactly the same questions.
Betty White was on that show a lot.
Yep.
Back in the day. Fannie Flagg, who I don't know anything about Fannie Flagg at all, even to this day. I don't know what she did or what, you know, what she was. Brett Summers, no idea what she did.
She was always on
it, though. She was on that show all the time. She was the permanent number two seat on Match Game with Nelson Reilly.
With Charles Nelson Reilly, I mean, I don't really even know what he did.
Yeah.
I think he was in a Cannonball movie.
I think he was in a couple of things, but I have no other idea. But the first chair was always like a current star on TV. Radar from MASH, the guy who played Radar.
Yeah, Gary Berghoff.
He was always in that chair. Richard Klein, who played Larry from Three's Company. The swinging bachelor underneath the apartment. He was on that show a lot in that number one seat. Richard Dawson had the five seat in the middle of the usually two women that usually there use the Betty White or Fannie Flagg that were down there. Gavin McLeod from Love Boat was on there once. They tons of stars. The mega stars too. The ones that were on hit TV shows would be on that show. So yeah, it was fun. It was really fun. Back in the day. And Gene Rayburn was the perfect host for it.
He was
so good at it.
Strange really looking microphone.
Yeah, that long, long stick microphone.
Yeah.
Kind of the Bob Barker-ish microphone.
I mean, just, I guess that was the thing, right? Let's like try to minimalize it as much as possible.
Yeah. My favorite part of that show, I cannot begin to tell you how much fun I'm having doing this. This is such a great Throwback Thursday. When the bonus round, he said to the contestant, "We polled our studio audience and got the best three answers to this question." And then they would have a word and a thing, you know, like Dixie blank, right?
Yeah.
And it would be Dixie cup or Dixie land or Dixie whatever. And what you would do is they would ask the celebrities for an answer. So you go Richard Dawson and he would say Dixie cup and the crowd would go nuts. And so that kind of gave you a clue that if they polled the studio audience and they're cheering Dixie cup, chances are Dixie cup is the one you want. That's going to give you the $500. It was almost like too easy. To go. Then they would say, you can choose one of those answers or choose one of your own. If you had the audacity to choose one of your own and not pick any of the celebrity answers, I think they kicked you off the show immediately. If Bob from like Dallas said, no, I'm going with one of my own, Dixie grass. Unless, I think they went, stop the game, you leave.
Unless the answer was so poor and you knew, I mean, you've seen it a couple times where you know, they just knew the answer.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, like if the answer was like United States of blank, and they were like, Chicago.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, I think I might go with America on my own.
I know.
Gene.
So wild. And then the thing was, I love this. So what would happen is the bonus round was supposed to go like this. You get an answer, you get three choices. You pick a choice, and then you choose the celebrity. Then you get another question. The celebrity has plenty of time to write it out, and then you guess, and then the celebrity tells you what they put down, and you either won or lost the bonus round. If, in the rare instance, you chose an answer in the first part of that didn't show up in the top three, the bonus round ended, and Gene Rayburn and the stars had to fill time at the end of the show because they lost like 5 or 6 minutes of showtime. So they had to produce a show that fit within a certain window. So they would just chat at the end. They would ask Nipsey Russell, like where he was going to be. And Nipsey Russell would be like, I'm playing at the Hilton January 7th through the 28th in Las Vegas. And you'd be like, okay, cool. Suzanne Plachette, what are you doing? Oh, I'm on Newhart, CBS, blah, 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 blah. What, you know, like that's how they would fill the time from the moron that couldn't figure out the easy studioed answer in the bonus round. Godly. I should direct one of these shows, shouldn't I?
You should.
Shouldn't I? Should become a game show director.
Is there a documentary on Match Game?
That would be good.
Or I don't even want a documentary. I just want behind the scenes.
I know.
Because you're absolutely right. When they came out, you could always see it in Richard Dawson.
Yeah, oh, completely.
How drunk Richard Dawson was. And like it's like, oh, this must be the seventh show they're filming today because he's lower in his chair than he was the previous.
Oh, can you imagine the stories? I remember when Dirk Benedict of Battlestar Galactica arrived, he was so coked up he couldn't pronounce his own name. Like the stories they must be able to tell. Like, oh, yeah, one time Gavin McLeod and Richard Dawson got into a heated argument as to, like, it must have been so fun.
I mean, they have a list. I found a list of certain people who were on there. I mean, we mentioned Charles Nils Reisen, Brett Summers, Betty White, Jimmy Walker.
Jimmy Walker was on that, yeah.
But, I mean, all the way back, too, to, like, Ethel Merman.
Ethel Merman was on Match Game. How great
Vicky
is that?
Lawrence. I remember seeing her a
Carol
lot.
Carol Burnett. Yeah.
Yeah. Mary Lou Henner, to name a few.
Mary Lou Henner was like Miss America or something, I think. If I'm not mistaken. I think so. I'm not mistaken.
It was all about the fashion, though. The fashion.
Yeah.
You look at some of these, especially Gene Rayburn when he came out. They were just, I mean, they were fantastic. And then what the contestants wore were equally as amazing.
He's equally as amazing. You ever watch it on like Game Land or whatever? They got those retro shows. Watch it, and it is seriously like, if you're around with a young teenager, their just jaws are going to drop. They're like, oh, my God, this looks like from another planet. This looks like it's from, seriously, out of our solar system. All right, so which team has a major decision to make in their playoff run? Well, there's one that's got a pretty big one to make, and I'll tell you who next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, the theme to Family Feud as we continue our tributes to game shows on a Throwback Thursday. So as I mentioned earlier, Ron, there's a team in the NFL that's got a big decision to make this weekend. And you would think
Chargers and Raiders to take a knee every down? Oh, you're talking about something else. Okay.
Right, yes. Now, there are teams that are playing for something, obviously, playing to get into the playoffs. The Saints, the Niners, the Chargers, Steelers, the Raiders, the Ravens. They're all trying to get into the postseason in some capacity. Even if it's a long shot, they're playing with they have something to play for. Others are playing for seeding. Some are just playing to just get the stupid season over with. But some are really playing for seeding, including one team in particular in the AFC. That is the Tennessee Titans. The Titans are 11-5. They own the tiebreaker over Kansas City based on head-to-head, and they're playing Houston coming up on Sunday. Now, these two teams met in like week 9, where the Texans went to Nashville and handed the Titans one of their losses. And it was really inexplicable, but the Titans in that game turned the ball over 5 times. It was kind of a wet, sloppy game. But the Texans ended up emerging victorious. So Tennessee has got a big decision to make coming up because a win would give them the first round bye, all of those things, right? And you definitely want to win. But the Titans are capable of winning that game straight up, not needing the services of Derrick Henry, who they've activated from the injured reserve to be able to practice this week. So the big question is, do the Titans start Derrick Henry in this Week 18 matchup? Now, on the one hand, you would say he's coming back, he's pretty rusty, get him in that game and let him, you know, get his sea legs back, if you will. But there's another concern with, well, how healthy is he? Just because you're coming off the IR, you might not be completely healthy, you might be good enough to go, but you may not be completely healthy. Would an extra 2 weeks do the trick for Derrick Henry? That's the big question. What if Henry goes out in a game that you could win anyway and just tweaks that injured foot a little bit more and he's not quite ready to go when the postseason arrives, whichever it may be, whether it is a first-round bye or they have to play in the first weekend of the NFL because somehow Houston beat them and Kansas City won its game against Denver? That's the big question. Now, I will say this. I haven't really been sold on Tennessee this season. I like them as a team, and I think there are games where I have, and I watch probably them more than anybody because I get them every Sunday. And there have been times where I've watched them where I've went, all right, yeah, this is a championship-level team. But then there have been plenty of times where I went, nah, I don't know if I'm buying them yet. I remember when they went to Los Angeles to play the Rams right after Derrick Henry got hurt, and I thought they would get smoked, and they didn't. They ended up winning that game. So if Derrick Henry is healthy, they could go to the Super Bowl easily.
Yeah, but you know what's weird? I mean, I know I think we've had him in our top 5.
Yeah.
From time to time.
But not a lot.
But we've never had him as our number one team.
No.
I don't think I've ever used him as like number 2 or 3. It's always been,
you
made it to 5 and then you're back down the next week because you look terrible.
Well, I will tell you this. After week 8, which is around where Henry went down, I have been on the record on this show saying many times that I thought the absence of Derrick Henry would rear its ugly head at some point, that they would start really noticing that they needed Derrick Henry. That really wasn't the case. When they lost 3 of 4, one of their biggest problem in those games was turning the ball over. They lost to Houston, New England, and Pittsburgh. There was the stretch there where they lost 3 of 4. They turned the ball over. It wasn't the running game because they ran up and down the Steelers all night. They just gave the other team the ball. Here, take it. New England, Pittsburgh, Houston, and that was the biggest problem that they had. But I did think at some point that their offense was going to be stagnant. Julio Jones and AJ Brown, you never knew I can't remember them playing together. Like I remember, like one would play, one was hurt, one was play. You know, the other would play, the other one was out. So I never saw them develop into this wide receiving threat that we kind of thought they could have at the beginning of the season. I thought if this offense is running the ball, if you want Ryan Tannehill to throw it like, I don't know, 18 times a game, and you want to just run, Foreman and Hilliard are good running backs, but they're not the consistent blow of Derrick Henry. They're not the consistent power of what Derrick Henry brings. Every Tennessee Titans analyst we've ever talked about on the show, and I would say, just, you know, we know how good he is, but his absence means what? Like, it's one thing to say, well, we replace the yardage, right? If Derrick Henry is going to run for 132 yards in a game, if you get that between two guys because you consistently give him the ball, you've matched the yardage from what you expect from the injury. But that wasn't what was missing from the Titans' offense. Hilliard and Foreman were good running backs, and they could replace, from a statistical aspect, the missing yards that Derrick Henry would provide. This is where Derrick Henry was most valuable for Tennessee. He could turn a four-yard pickup into a 60-yard touchdown run, where you were like, it's third and four. Henry would go up the middle, get your first down, but then break that second level, and he'd be gone for a touchdown. He was a threat you always had to account for on the first and second levels of your defense, because he could get through the first level pretty good. That was what Tennessee was missing, the home run running back. Foreman and Hilliard, they weren't that kind of running back. If you needed them to pick up five, they'd pick up five, and that would be pretty much it. Henry could pick up the five plus 30 more, and that's what they were missing. Again, if he can play against Tennessee, against Houston, I think you can play him this weekend to see, but I wouldn't make him I wouldn't have a steady diet of him. But in the postseason, if they do get that first round bye and he gets another couple of weeks to rest and practice and really get gelling, that's the threat he brings to a team vying for a Super Bowl. They're not going to win games on Nissan Stadium alone. They're not going to win games on defense alone. They're not going to win with Ryan Tannehill alone. They are capable of going to the Super Bowl with Derrick Henry. That's the question. And do you risk it playing the Texans, or do you let him take another week off, practice but not play, rest and a bye, go into the first game really, really, really ready to go? But boy, if they lose to Houston, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Because now the Chiefs, you know, they got to beat Denver. And that game will be on Saturday, so they'll know.
Yep.
When they play Sunday, they'll know they'll need to win. And you know what? I mean this, I'm not trying to be like, all these games matter. Teams like to play spoiler.
Like, yeah.
Don't think Jacksonville is going to roll over against the Colts because they got nothing to play for. These guys love doing that. They love being – if they do have something to play for. They want to be a conversation.
But what happens – all right. I know you bring up teams love to play spoiler, the role of spoiler. And, you know, we have a really unique situation happening this weekend. If the Steelers are to lose to the Ravens, right?
Right.
And for some god-awful reason, Jaguars get over the Colts. Do the Chargers or Raiders want to really play the role of spoiler?
I know.
In that Sunday night matchup?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Because, I mean, because they'll know everything that's happening by the time their game kicks off.
That's right.
Could you see a situation where both teams, you know, maybe it's like a hidden agreement underneath the tunnel somewhere in Vegas, and they go, guys, we're going to sit Justin Herbert. Are you guys going to sit Derek Carr?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
We'll take our starters out if you take yours out, and let's just, you know, see what happens today.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Wink, wink.
Yeah, that is a good point. There's so many cool scenarios in this one. A lot of it has to do with seating and whatnot, but there's a lot of cool scenarios.
But I will say this. I was saying this earlier to some guys that I ran into this morning, and I feel like we're missing something this weekend.
Because the playoffs should be starting.
Because the playoffs should be starting. You know, it's beginning of January and we still haven't started. We still have another week of football, and that it finally hit me, like, you know, it's like that internal clock that you have, like, yeah, something ain't right.
I know.
It's off.
I know. This is, because this was always like your post-holiday treat.
Right? Yeah.
Like, you would get you'd have a month of Christmas, you know, all the Christmas movies, the lights, the presents, every Christmas feeling. But then after the New Year's, all of that stuff gets put away. But it's okay because the playoffs are boom, right? Like, they're the first
playoffs
weekend out of the gate.
Hey,
right?
Maybe there was Black Monday that happened, and we can start talking about some teams' futures.
Right. Instead, Mike Zimmer has to wait another week before the Vikings let him go. Right? Or Matt Nagy has to wait another week, just prolonging the inevitable.
By the way, did Baker Mayfield forget the clock?
Yeah.
And he says, no, we can schedule surgery. NFL season's over then. Yeah. Oh, wait, it's not.
Now that I don't have anything to play for, I can have that surgery. My goodness. All right, coming back, I've got one thought. It's going to be my third time talking about this. But one more final thought on that Kirk Herbstreit conversation they had with Desmond Howard, because Herbstreit answered that. But I want to answer him next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Final segment of this show. Thanks for joining us. This has been a fun Throwback Thursday in the king of all game shows, Jeopardy, closing us out. Happy anniversary to Wheel of Fortune on this date.
Or happy birthday, however you want to say, right?
Happy birthday, Wheel of Fortune, on this day, made its television debut. I always love the fact that Rolf Brnerschke was a host of this show, former San Diego Chargers kicker, because I'm old enough to remember in my youth the 1982 AFC divisional playoff game between the Chargers and the Dolphins, considered one of the greatest football games ever played in the history of the NFL. That's the infamous Kellen Winslow needed to be carried off the field.
Yep.
This was a game that went into double overtime. This was a game that David Woodley, I think, was the starting quarterback for the Dolphins, but he was replaced by Don Strock, who's a kind of a veteran QB. Dan Fouts and the Chargers raced out to a nice, big, comfortable lead, but the Dolphins came back and made it a really good game. In fact, at the end of the first half, there was a hook and ladder play that the Dolphins scored a touchdown on that caused the Orange Bowl to shake. It was really exciting. But this game went back and forth, and the real players of this game were Uwe Von Schaman of the Dolphins and Rolf Brnerschke of the Chargers, because neither one of them could hit field goals. They were getting blocked. They were missing. They were, until Brnerschke knocked it through the uprights to end this classic. It was Winslow blocking kicks. It was nuts. It was one of the greatest games of all time. It was played in extreme humidity and heat. And then the very next week, the Chargers experienced incredible cold in their AFC title bout with the Bengals. But Rolf Brnerschke, who hosted Wheel of Fortune, I have no idea how he got that gig, was a kicker in the Chargers.
He was in Southern California at the time.
Yeah, but why would you pick him over the bevy of people that could host Wheel of Fortune?
I have no idea. That's why
How do you send one Chargers kicker as the resume to host a game show? There were people like who probably hosted game shows that wanted the gig back at the time. But again, the kicker that ended one of the greatest games, if not the greatest game in NFL history, became the host of Wheel of Fortune. Listen, people, I'm giving you free trivia. Take with it as you will. Take it to parties. Take it to the office. Do what you want with it. But it's valuable information. Where else are you going to get Rolf Brnerschke hosted Wheel of Fortune and kick the winning field goal in the greatest game of all time? Nowhere. Trust me. Nowhere. All right. Kirk Herbstreit had a comment. He elaborated on a podcast about his football players don't love the game. He said he did not mean all players. I kind of figured that, but that's not what he said. So I believe that you can take people for what they said, but you can also give them leeway if they sort of misspoke or got caught in the moment. I said a couple of days ago that if you do this for a living, sometimes you do say things in general when you did mean specific and you kind of got caught and it was in a conversational moment. Herbstreit didn't do a prepared thing. That's the problem. He was talking off the cuff. So if he had a prepared monologue, like where he typed it out, they put it in the teleprompter, he was reading it from the seat, then you could criticize him for misspeaking. I'm not going to criticize him for misspeaking. But what I am going to say is this. In that podcast, when he was asked to elaborate on it, he did throw blame at the media and people who wanted to, put together their own narrative. I don't think that was the case. I think there was a way he said that, and the way Desmond Howard said that, that did imply that players who opted out of bowl games weren't doing it for the right reasons, that they were selfish, that they were leaving the team, and that somehow this was a bad thing, that if you were the kind of player that did this, you made a bad choice. which I don't think is the case. Jerry Palm and I last hour were talking about this, and Jerry is in agreement with me. I think each individual has to do it for their own individual reasons. And I don't think blaming the media for taking you out of context and creating your own narrative makes you look like a victim when you should just come out and say, guys, I really misspoke on this. And let me give you a couple of points. I was kind of caught up in the emotion, but here's things I really mean, rather than saying, oh, yeah, but you guys should have all known this whole time that I'm okay with the changing landscape. He talked about his children. They got electronics now, and they're a lot different than I was when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I grew up with nothing to do but go outside with my friends and play football. Okay, that's the old, you know, it was better in my day kind of thing. I get it. But I really do think, and this is going back to what I was talking about with Jerry Palm, I really honestly think when he talks about his generation not opting out, I think there were plenty of players who wanted to opt out.
Yeah.
I think there are plenty of players.
But they were just, like, you know, we've said it all along, too. They might have been too scared.
They might have been scared.
How about this?
They were told. They were told by the authority people in their lives, if you do it, the NFL will turn their back on you.
How about this? Rich Ornberger, right, who was a former player himself, and he's now a radio host down in San Diego, said, you know, instead of college football players, instead of saying opting out, how about going pro or graduating to the NFL?
That's perfect. That's a better way to put that, because opting out is a terrible way to put it.
Yeah, it sounds negative.
That's right.
Like they quit, but they're not.
Well, here's something positive. Denton Day is coming up next. We'll be back tomorrow to wrap up the week, give you our rundown of the NFL games. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.